Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Kirk Anthony Hamilton from Kingston, Jamaica. I'm the co-founder and director of Tech Beach Retreat.
Kirk, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Very excited about this conversation today. Lots to cover, lots to unpack. You guys been busy, a lot of events going on, so that's always exciting. But before we do that, before we talk about all the great stuff you guys are building, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me first and foremost. I was quite honored by the invite to be here to kind of spread the message of the work we're doing as far as we can. My background, I think, may be interesting to some of your audience. So I studied architecture at the Savannah College of Art and Design, where I obtained a master's degree in architecture, a professional master's. I did go on to work for a little bit in the industry, but I found myself in a place, you know, before going to college and even in college, where I felt like the traditional architecture career path was just simply not what I wanted. But I have a mother who comes from a banking background, and her take on my evolving passions was that, you know, given my creative desires, right? I loved architecture from the time I was about 5 years old. I would make my parents drive me all over the place. She felt like I needed to embrace the creative side because she felt like, you know, the business side, she sensed I had a certain level of acumen for. And she just felt like going to business school or doing something like accounting, et cetera, just wasn't going to allow me to form the full expression of myself, right? So she kind of pressed this idea that, well, look, if we're going to send you to college, we're more focused on the architecture side and you being creative. If you choose to do an MBA or anything like that post, then you can, right? Either way, I followed that path. And after graduating, working in the field for a little bit, I kind of re-embraced my passion for entrepreneurship, which I had been nurturing on the side from a full-time perspective. I was involved in the founding of a private investment firm in the Caribbean that looked to flip the script on its head. For those who are familiar with the Caribbean, we're typically looking for investment to come into the Caribbean. You rarely hear stories about, you know, high net worth individuals or any others forming a vehicle to place capital outside the Caribbean to then generate some kind of return for the region. So we did that with a focus on the US and a focus on digital media and sustainability. We had some headwinds, as with anything early stage. And while we raised a couple million dollars and invested into a few businesses, it wasn't without challenge. And eventually I parted ways with the folks that I had started this with. And when I did that, that birthed everything that I think we're going to discuss today, which was I had to take a step back. I'd left the field of architecture. I'd taken a stab at this approach to entrepreneurship. We had some level of success in that, but, you know, then we faced these challenges that I mentioned. And the way I kind of looked at it was, what has shaped my career is taking a step back and looking at things as starting from the beginning as opposed to the end. And so I say this to people in emerging markets all the time, that, you know, we tend to suffer this challenge of looking at models from North America, Europe, et cetera, more advanced markets, and you try to deliver exactly what is happening there at the stage where it is, right? And I think through my journey of hitting these different obstacles when we were trying to raise capital and get the message out, et cetera, I mean, just imagine something as simple at the time, this was back in 2013, right? 2012, 2013, we were trying to buy app development companies. Some of these companies had done work for Xerox and Harley Davidson, et cetera. And a part of our growth plan was we would help them to grow throughout the region and we hit a brick wall, right? We'd go to large companies saying, hey, you're going to need an app. This is what we see. You know, let's work together. And they would almost give a response like, why would I need that, right? Fast forward to now, you know, a lot of large companies in the Caribbean still don't have apps. Some do, more and more do. And so a message that I had shared back then became very true. I said, you know, the words disruption and innovation are going to become pitch words in the Caribbean 5 years from now. So that would have been around 2018. And that's kind of what we've seen. But the basic takeaway for me was, Kirk, you need to start at the beginning in order to build an ecosystem that actually embraces what it is you're trying to achieve, right? Because when you look at Silicon Valley and all these other markets that we tend to admire, the reality is they benefit from this very fertile environment, right? And that's simply not what we were seeing in the Caribbean at the time. A lot has changed now, in part due to our work. And you know, we're on an exciting journey, as you pointed to earlier.
Well, that's super exciting, very diverse background you have going from the architecture to, you know, private equity, I guess. And, you know, now with Tech Beach. So tell us a little bit more about that transition period. What are some of the lessons learned, those experiences, those skills that you've developed early in your career that really helped you kind of propel and succeed in your current role? And then maybe segue the conversation into what is it that you guys are currently building with the Tech Beach, and what is, you know, what is the ultimate value you're looking to deliver?
Okay. That's an interesting question, because I feel like my background in architecture, especially given where I studied, has shaped significantly how I approach business. So I went to a art and design school, which meant that when I graduated and started working for firms, one of the challenges I felt I had transitioning was that we came from a very concept-based background, right? Like, design something beautiful, don't think too much about how it gets built, et cetera. Coming from the Caribbean, I applied a fairly practical approach, to the point where I usually say to people, I used to think some of my classmates were crazy. And then what I came to learn late in college slash even post-college was that they were designing for a future that they wanted to happen, right? Whereas I was more so trained probably to build for the future as I see it now, right? And, or not really, sorry, I was more so trained to think of the present. That's the better way for me to put it, right? So my designs in college, while I would get my A's and such like that, which was a big focus of mine, I just wasn't doing that many out of the box crazy ideas, right? And that has become a big part of my mantra in business is, you know, building not for what I see today, but building for what, for the tomorrow that I want to see, right? In addition to that, you know, college for me, the design environment, while it wasn't overly technical, as I pointed to, which creates some challenges when you go into the real market, one of the things that was really kind of enforced in us was we did these, what were called critiques, right? And in a design studio, ever so often, every few weeks, you do a design critique. And what that means is that you have to pull up your work in front of an audience of people. Some of them are your classmates. Some of them are people you've never met. And you have to express the idea, and you have to be open to what is typically termed constructive criticism. However, in some instances, it can be quite harsh, right? And there's no real designed boundary wherein someone can tear into you. And so, you know, one of the things I found very helpful is that I got very used to the idea of standing in front of people, presenting my objective, presenting my ideas, et cetera, and really not taking too much personally when it came to the feedback that I would receive, right? Even if someone's intent was harsh, that really prepared me for this real world in that regard, right? So I'm a storyteller by all means when it comes to my business. And what we have aimed to do is craft a story around the Caribbean, not as it is today, but around what is possible. And so when you ask about my current career, what I would say that looks like is I have worked to build a series of platforms, TechBeach being one of the better known, especially in the tech world, naturally. I've worked to create these platforms that ultimately aim to attract investment, innovation, and influence into the Caribbean, right? In a mission to bring our people into a space where they can connect with global ideas, resources, capital, knowledge, et cetera. Building a space where they can also connect on a level playing field where, you know, they stand on their own two feet and they are respected for their own achievements. Because oftentimes, you know, emerging markets get looked at from the outside as everything is a need, right? They need us for this, they need us for that. And very often is the message shaped as, but here's the value they deliver to you, right? So we focused on that a lot. And, you know, we try to connect with global authorities that people trust. So the simple message being, if you ever thought about investing in Jamaica or Barbados, right, you are more likely to hear or listen to the message coming from Forbes or the Wall Street Journal, et cetera, despite the flack that some of these organizations are more and more receiving. That's what you know, right? That's the authority that a North American would know. And so my approach to driving growth in the Caribbean has been, if resources are going to be needed from the outside, we have to connect with the authorities that these people trust, right? That these people have come to know, because the Jamaican newspaper or the Barbados newspaper just simply is not going to be read with a certain level of authority, right? Just like, you know, in Jamaica, you have newspapers that are not as well respected as some of our top tier newspapers. And that's just simply the reality. If the message comes through one of those lower tier publications, people just aren't going to hear it. So that's been our focus. But what that has evolved in, especially on the side of Tech Beach, is that we've become a platform for the exchange of resources, for learning and development, right? And for capital exchange. So we do a number of things. We host a series of conferences, salons, and various events, et cetera, both online and in person. The online has definitely been pushed by the pandemic. We never really used to be too excited about online before. We also run the Caribbean's first technology-focused accelerator program where everything is tech. All the companies have to be invested in tech. And we partner with organizations like Google and AWS and Microsoft and such like that. A number of entities that do not have a real presence in the Caribbean, but opt to work with us to offer their resources to Caribbean entrepreneurs, which is a, you know, as we see it, a landmark achievement. If you're operating, again, in Silicon Valley or, you know, New York or even Toronto, et cetera, you will find these things may not have the same level of meaning or impact because they're so distributed and so, you know, well spread, right? There are accelerator programs all over New York City. You join one, very likely they have an agreement with somebody like an organization like AWS. You're going to get access to credits, this, that, whatever. AWS has a large office in New York. They have a large office in a lot of the markets that I will refer to. Whereas in the Caribbean, none of this exists. There's no executive representing AWS residing in the Caribbean, right? And so to have these organizations from their seats in Seattle and Silicon Valley and these other major hubs decide that, you know what, we are going to take some resources, even though we can not really address this to our bottom line, we're going to take some resources and start deploying towards this market with this vision of the future that they've been ultimately sold by us. I think that's where people really recognize the value and the impact that we've been able to create to attract these entities to want to give and deliver in this way and really look at a market that is at its nascent stages as a future potential market in alignment with TechBeach.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And thank you for sharing a lot of the context as far as what you guys are building, what's the value out there for, you know, for the entrepreneurs, for investors. And me, myself, being in private equity and venture capital, I try to keep myself informed, educated on all the things in all different markets, because we invest in emerging markets and based in US and the Singapore, you know, granted, Caribbean does not come first to mind when it comes to seeing, you know, unique investment opportunities. So can you share a little bit more insights into what you are seeing maybe to your, within your network? What are the different investment opportunities that are out there available in the Caribbean? What maybe what is the just the overall state of maybe technology talent that that looks like in Caribbean? We hear a lot about concepts such as, you know, the near shore, you know, utilizing countries within the Central America or even South America. But Caribbean does not necessarily come at the top of that list. So maybe paint a little bit of a picture from your context, because you've been so exposed, you've been, you know, operating day to day in that environment. I would love to hear more about the state of the technology talent. What are the different investment opportunities in that region?
That's a great question. And I would say, you know, the Caribbean really kind of lacks visibility, especially in the tech space when it comes to, you know, what is the value proposition of the region and why should people look to set up here? I had an interesting conversation with a lady yesterday evening from the UK who's based in Barbados. You know, she works at a high level with a financial institution slash platform that has developed some, you know, tech around an exchange. You know, I'm careful, not an FTX like thing, but you know, they are dealing with tokens and such like that. And the reality is there's this kind of challenge that you face in the world. So what I would say to you is that the Caribbean and some of our markets, especially those that focus on offshoring, like Barbados, where I am sitting right now, even though I'm Jamaican, Cayman, Bermuda, the Bahamas, etc., has really developed a certain level of legislation to engage and embrace the new world. The unfortunate reality, however, is that on the ground, we don't have the ecosystem to support these things, right? And then the flip side of it is in the UK and US, et cetera, you know, you have the ecosystem, the technology, the infrastructure, et cetera, to support these new age ideas, but the legislation is slow to match this vision that people now have, right? And that's where two worlds can ultimately merge. The pandemic shifted or caused a movement, as you may be aware, when it comes to remote work, which had a heavy impact on the Caribbean, especially on those territories that I just mentioned, where people are now, you know, shifting away from short-term tourism, which has been our model for decades, to long-term stays, literally coming here and living as if they'll never leave, right? So that creates this space that, you know, the region really has never, I think, paid much attention to, because it probably wasn't possible before. The value prop of the Caribbean, as I see it, is that we are in nearshore territory, as you mentioned. We are English speaking. It takes anywhere from an hour to 4 hours to get from any major hub of the Caribbean to any major hub of the US, being New York and Miami. So I'd say East Coast hub. Obviously, San Francisco is quite a bit further, but it's further for any territory on the East Coast as well. Toronto as well is about 4.5 hours to 6 hours away from most islands in the region, right? So there's a big value proposition there, and these are all direct flights. Caribbean people tend to have this affinity towards Western culture, which makes it that we are better positioned to deal with customer-facing interactions, right? And I don't want to take away from our brothers and sisters in the East. You've mentioned your connection to Singapore, et cetera. But, you know, the reality is I have a brother, he lives in Australia. You know, if you've ever spent time in Australia, there's a big disconnect between how Australians view the US and how, let's say, a Jamaican would view the US, right? And so we have this admiration and alignment with how Americans live, right? That I think makes us very poised for this kind of business connection and to help make things happen. So one of the things you'll already, well, you may awaken to after this conversation is that we have a fairly sizable nearshore industry in Jamaica at this stage. It's the fastest growing industry that we have when it comes to business process outsourcing, ultimately call centers. The next big opportunity is to evolve those nearshore centers into more tech-focused value-added services, right? However, Amazon, Delta Airlines, you know, a host of global Fortune 500 companies leverage resources in Jamaica to answer their customer service needs. So I find it interesting. There are many times when I get on calls with these organizations, you know, trying to deal with an order that went wrong or, you know, a flight that didn't go where it was supposed to go. And I'm on the phone with somebody and I'm like, hold on, are you in Jamaica? Are you Jamaican? Followed by, are you sitting in Jamaica? And they're like, yeah, I'm in Montego Bay. You know, it's always quite an interesting dialogue. And I know a lot of Americans and North Americans overall are not aware of this dynamic, but we see that as the base plate for the massive opportunity that we think exists in the Caribbean, right? And then the last thing I'll touch on from the entrepreneurship perspective, the industries that we see the greatest level of possibilities for are those that are disrupting legacy industries, right? Legacy spaces. So we see big opportunities in tourism, health, finance is a big one. The Caribbean has very robust financial infrastructure. We have a lot of banks. Our banks make very good profit typically. If you were to measure their ratios of revenue versus profit compared to your typical North American bank, they would, you know, kick butt. Their assets under management are not nearly as large, but the reality is they have these models that feed them cash, given the size of the market that they're in, right? And so, you know, fintech is a very big play and a very big space for us. We also see a lot of opportunity in logistics, moving goods around each island and the region. And that's where we're seeing a lot of the entrepreneurs operate. And so, you know, are we a test bed for going to space? I don't think so. And should we be? I'm not sure as yet. We're not the deep tech, you know, hub of the world, nor do I know that we're going after that. What I think we are going after is you have a market in the world where people are well-educated. People speak English very clearly and very well, right? And they are searching for opportunity. And so they're amenable to identifying possibilities that allow them to live life in a way that is not how we have constructed it in the Caribbean so far, which, you know, the tech world brings the most extreme side of that lifestyle to people. And that to me, in a collective, is where the opportunity really sits for the region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. One of my favorite quotes goes within the lines of losers react, leaders anticipate. So yeah. when it comes to the different trends and the insights, and you seem like, you know, having a hand on the pulse with all of the things going on, not only in the Caribbean, but also in the nearer markets as well. Because if, you know, especially in the events that you guys organize, you bring a lot of thought leadership, you bring a lot of practitioners, you bring a lot of, you know, probably successful case studies of here's what are the things to do, here's where to build, things like that. From your personal lens, from your personal view, what do you anticipate? What are some of the trends that you personally very excited about, whether that's in your region, whether that's in your industry, whether that's, you know, investment opportunities? Just share a little bit more insight into what is Kirk personally very excited about, and what, you know, what are the different investment opportunities that you're exploring yourself?
I like that. So I first want to touch on something that I've been saying to a lot of people. I feel like, you know, we're in an age right now where, with all that is happening, you know, from FTX, which I mentioned earlier, to the seeming meltdowns that we're seeing in some of the large tech companies like Meta, you know, Amazon, et cetera, these large layoffs that these companies are exercising. And my simple belief is that technology is simply a tool to make life easier, right? And I don't see that going away, no matter who the naysayers may be, in the sense that you're answering a very simple question. Why wouldn't I want to live life more efficiently? And all that any of these companies do is build tools to allow for that, right? So what you're seeing is that, to me, there's a cycle happening. You know, I remember as a kid when you know, the US went through this with Detroit, right? And the car makers and, you know, the tons of layoffs that were experienced there. And, you know, these companies are still present with us today. They're still thriving. They're still profitable, right? So downward cycles are natural. And I believe if you compare the car industry to the tech industry, you'd have to operate on the stance that technology really has not seen as yet the lifespan that an industry like the car industry has seen, right? So for some of these companies that, you know, were birthed in 1999 and 2004, 2005, to be hitting their first real run with, you know, I would say an economic decline, really bashing their prospects, to me, you have to believe, given the centuries-old cycles of many other industries, that there is more to come, right? And this is certainly not the end. And what you see them doing is somewhat de-bloating, because, you know, we have a culture in tech to try to grow aggressively. And, you know, a bunch of things are adding up right now that are kind of slowing us down in a bit. And so companies naturally choose to de-bloat. But when you look at their revenue numbers, et cetera, and I encourage people to always think in this way, you're not talking about entities that are scraping by a few $100,000, you know, a mom and pop shop hoping for survival, right? You're talking about companies generating 20, 30, $40 billion and these kind of numbers, and you're hearing about declines of 4% and 3%. And, you know, this company is in so much trouble because their numbers are down by 5%. And I always say to folks, you know, if you run a $100,000 business today and next year, you make $95,000. Are you shutting down? No, right? So that's how I look at the broad landscape. In terms of where I see the biggest opportunities, I'll give kind of two lenses. On a global level, I see the greatest opportunities living in artificial intelligence and cybersecurity, right? Artificial intelligence, just on the end of what I mentioned, right? People are looking for things to be easier. And I believe artificial intelligence is the greatest extension of us that we have encountered so far. And as long as it can be built responsibly, which, you know, coming from a place like the Caribbean, I have to be a major champion of, is just, you know, it cannot be the wild, wild west. And those are not the ideas that we look to embrace. But the simple reality being that I see artificial intelligence being able to further us along significantly in the way that we work, right? And then on the end of cybersecurity, as we dive into tech more and more, you know, the reality is physical security is a massive global industry, right? We have had a need to create boundaries between our, I guess I'd say, products and people who want to take advantage of those in a way that doesn't agree with the way the business is designed, right? And so we're seeing this very high level of attacks on technology platforms, which I don't think is any different than people trying to rob supermarkets and, you know, access offices they're not supposed to, et cetera. Just as tech makes it easier to build out these platforms, it does make it a bit easier to access large swaths of information. So that's where I see, you know, a big, big opportunity. And then from the Caribbean end, I think we have a huge opportunity, given the shortage, as I know it, in the cybersecurity space, to service the globe with cybersecurity-based talent, right? That's an area, you know, I spoke earlier about not really being the deep tech hub of the world. I could see us becoming a cybersecurity hub, much like Israel. And then also, I feel like with the economic climate, we are going to see a shift again to outsourcing. Right? I think more and more organizations are going to, especially at the early to mid stages, want their tech developed on the outskirts of the business, right? And managed by teams that they can engage in more flexible manners, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, just for the context of your audience, if you raise $2 million in San Francisco, you probably burn that in. You're on a burn rate of either 6 months to a year, right? Depending on your VCs, et cetera, and your model. in the Caribbean, $2 million could run a startup 3-4 years, right? It's a lot of money in our context. You're not paying engineers $180,000 base straight out of school, right? And that is where I think a huge opportunity is going to exist, because if you can engage through outsourcing an engineer at an annual rate of a third or even a quarter of what you're paying, while they can live a meaningful life in the place that they reside in, and you're not demanding that they leave in order to capture this income. I mean, I hope I'm seeing it on your face, but you can only imagine what that could actually yield in terms of possibilities. And the reality is, we've seen it elsewhere. We've seen it with Africa, and we've seen it with South America. And, you know, in older cycles of the world, we saw it in Asia, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's kind of just moving. And the Caribbean, I think, is positioned, or can and should position, to be the next place in the cycle that benefits.
That's very interesting. Definitely learning something new, as you know, and appreciate you being generous with the insights that you're sharing, at least from your personal lens. To bring it all together with the few big events that you guys are putting together with the Tech Beach, can you share what can one expect, or what can one learn from events as such? Who is the ideal audience? Who should attend an event like this? Any color from that perspective definitely would be very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting, because we don't have a tech hub per se as a region. In designing this event, we've taken a different approach than what we've seen in most markets, and it's been to our benefit, right? As we see it. So our aim from day one was to try to create the most diverse tech space in the world. And I think we're doing well at it. I wouldn't make the claim that we are the most diverse as yet, but, you know, we've been able to avoid certain tracks, right? So we're not trapped in any particular industry. We're not trapped in any particular race, and we're not trapped in any particular geography. So you won't meet people in Tech Beach who say, I only invest in the US. You won't meet people who are only focused on one segment of the market, et cetera. We find a lot of players who are globally agnostic, right? The other big thing is, you know, if you look us up, you might get an impression that we're this big event, large event, which people seem to tend to think. You will not find more than about 500 people inside of a Tech Beach, which is quite intimate in comparison to, you know, events with 10,000 and 30,000 and 50,000 people, which is actually why we were designed, right? I went to a very large global tech conference years ago, and I found that I really loved how the tech community kind of got together, the willingness of people to travel, the collaborative spirit, et cetera. But what I found in the event was that people were struggling to really connect. They didn't know who was who in the event. They didn't know how to navigate such a large space, right? And their experience wasn't very curated. It was simply come to this city, book a hotel wherever, and come to this conference hall on these different days, and, you know, figure out where you get value. We have these different groups coming together. So we took a different approach. We're at an all-inclusive resort in Jamaica. What that means is, once people pay a fee for their hotel, they have nothing to think about in terms of food and beverage, etc., right? So having a meeting and such like that is just, it's easy, right? We operate with a no hierarchy environment. So there's no VIP, there's no speaker lounge, there's none of those elements that make conference events fragmented, so that you're unable to navigate the room and pick up connections in a meaningful way, right? So that has always been a very big focus of ours, is just ensuring that people are able to make meaningful connections with each other, so that the relationships derive value, because we're not an advertising space, right? So what you'll find in large conferences is, you're the product, kind of like social media and these other things. You are the product. You're walking through a room, you look in the sky, you see a massive banner for a tech company. And that's ultimately what they've been sold, is that 10,000 people are going to walk past this banner and they're going to see it. And that's the value add to your brand. What we sell to brands is business leads. So you are going to discover opportunity and pipeline inside of our space. What we also find is that ego gets completely removed in our space for some reason. Maybe it's because you're on a beach in the islands and, you know, you're not in this kind of hectic metropolitan environment, right? Where what you find with those metropolitan conferences is in that hall, you'll meet people by about 2 o'clock. You know, a bunch of people are saying to you, oh, yeah, I got to get back to the office, or, you know, I have a meeting downtown with this person, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot built in because of all the distractions around. In our event, one of the things we're able to promise the partners is presence of our participants, because there's really nowhere for them to go, right? They're not in the middle of nowhere, but there's no Facebook office down the street for someone to go have a meeting at, right? So for the most part, our audience is quite captured. If we say to them, hey, there's a breakfast meeting happening tomorrow morning at this time, they're in, because they're going to go to breakfast anyway. And they prefer to, you know, do it with some level of camaraderie and, you know, in a curated environment. So those are some of the expectations you can expect as well, you know, because of all of what I just shared, insights that you might not find, or a willingness to be open in a way that you might not find in your typical North American kind of guarded environment, where people have to be careful, right? When we get our speakers from a lot of these big companies around the world, you know, we are naturally met with a bunch of questions that any conference producer is met with. And the terminology that I have started to use to them as just the starting point and the mantra is, listen, you are not coming into a space where anybody is looking to or is positioned to try to affect your share price, right? And it seems to resonate very well with them in terms of understanding the environment that we've built, right? So come share. There's nobody here looking to take away from your business or to write up a script that ends up sending shockwaves through the market that you know, creates a massive issue for your company to solve, et cetera. And that ultimately defines our environment. We are a place where people connect more on the basis of their passion than their position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense what you're talking about as far as the environment. Environment does matter. I attend conferences, you know, on almost on monthly basis of conferences of various size, and the silos and fragmentation, I can definitely agree with you that it is, I think, a challenge at a lot of conferences. And what I also notice is from the organizer perspective, it's more of a, you know, a game of that advertising revenue and the sponsorship opportunities versus really creating an environment where the attendees, the participants, the speakers can derive value from each other, that I can definitely have an opportunity to connect with the folks that I think, you know, will be helpful to me, and vice versa. I can deliver this particular value to those participants. So that's very refreshing. That's very interesting. It definitely resonates. That's why, you know, part of the reason I was very excited about this conversation is to learn a little bit more about the opportunities as such. And, you know, hopefully that we'll get an opportunity to collaborate on, you know, one of the events. And in general, Kirk, I really appreciate your time today. That, you know, it was a very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit, especially about the region, about what you guys are building. What I love doing with all the podcast guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit everything we've talked about and see if everything still makes sense, still applies. So I definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I look forward to that. And again, really appreciate the invite. We always look for opportunities to spread our message into the markets that we target. And I think this is very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.